African embassy in Washington, D.C., protesting against the apartheid regime. His books included The Debt, What America Owes to Blacks, and Quitting America, The Departure of a Black Man from His Native Land, as well as the book An Unbroken Agony, Haiti, From Revolution to the Kidnapping of a President. To see all of our interviews, go to democracynow.org with Randall Robinson. Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez is moderating an online panel today on Chicago's 2023 mayoral race, reclaiming Harold Washington's multiracial coalition. You can see details at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is also currently accepting applications for a digital fellow. You can learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Masood, and Sanji Lopez. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, and Dennis McCormick. To see all of our interview segments, you can go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Lady Sings the Blues, a tribute to Billie Holiday 2023. On Saturday, April 8th, from 8 p.m. to 10:45 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater in Portland. The 16th annual Billie Holiday Tribute brings together musicians of many genres to pay tribute to influential jazz singer and songwriter Billie Holiday. Performances feature Marsha Hocker, LaRonda Steele, Arietta Ward, and more. Again, that's the 16th annual Billie Holiday Tribute Night, Lady Sings the Blues, on Saturday, April 8th, from 8 p.m. to 10:45 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater, 3000 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland police investigate a weekend shooting in broad daylight that killed three. A beloved Portland LGBTQ icon may soon have a street named after her. And politicians react and offer support to victims of deadly tornadoes in Mississippi. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, March 27, 2023. I'm Michelle Coppola. Three people were killed in North Portland this weekend in what is being called the city's deadliest shooting of 2023. The Oregonian reports that surveillance footage from a doorbell camera shows three people on foot shooting into a light-colored sedan in Portland's Portsmouth neighborhood. That's near University Park. It happened in broad daylight about 12:30 p.m. on Saturday. It's estimated from the video that some three dozen shots were fired by the assailants. It's not clear from the footage, however, if the shooters were male or female, as their faces and other identifying physical details were obscured by the hoods of their sweatshirts. As of today, police have reported no arrests related to the incident. Multnomah County District Attorney Mike Schmidt did issue a statement about the shooting. He said, quote, "The loss of three people to gun violence is a tragedy and unimaginable loss to their families and communities. While we are in the very early stages of investigation, we will work tirelessly to bring those responsible to justice." These killings are the 15th, 16th, and 17th suspected homicides in Portland this year. If you have any information about the shootings, you are asked to contact Jason Koenig at 503 523-0889 or Detective William Winters at 503-823-0466. You may recall that last week we reported on the Oregon legislature's passage of a record $200 million funding package to address housing and homelessness in the state. Unfortunately, it appears that none of that money can be used toward Mayor Ted Wheeler's plans to build mass tent encampments, at least not in their present proposed form. The Portland Mercury reports that Governor Tina Kotek, who has made addressing the homeless crisis a priority, has committed to helping Portland cover the cost of mass homeless camps if they build sleeping pods. This is instead of the proposed tent shelters, which would not be eligible. This is primarily due to the fact that courts have ruled previously that tents do not constitute adequate shelter. The court went on to say that camping bans are prohibited unless a city can offer such shelter. This has led Mayor Wheeler and city leaders to consider pivoting from providing tents in the new mass shelter sites to providing hard-sided sleeping pods. The first city-run homeless mass encampment site is slated to open later this year in the Central East Side District near Powell Boulevard and Southeast 13th Avenue. Urban Alchemy, a California-based nonprofit, has been named to manage the site. The governor is also in the news because she wants to give the Oregon Department of Education greater authority over school districts. Governor Kotek's plan, embodied in Senate Bill 1045, would give the department more power when it comes to ensuring the districts are following state rules and regulations. It would allow the department to withhold state funding from school districts in certain circumstances or direct how money is spent. The governor's intention is to address longstanding problems in Oregon public schools, including poor reading outcomes and low high school graduation rates. Currently, the Department of Education has limited power to address issues when schools are out of compliance. Under current state policy, school districts fill out assurance forms, pledging that they are following state requirements. The Education Department only investigates districts if someone files a complaint. SB 1045 creates a monitoring process to ensure compliance. The bill authorizes the department to identify districts as non-standard if they are in violation of laws or rules related to student health or safety, discrimination, special education, or access to education. School districts deemed out of compliance would first be required to submit a corrective action plan, and that has to be approved by the state. SB 1045 also gives officials flexibility to block or limit various state funding sources. The bill allows the state to intervene in spending decisions performed by local school superintendents and school boards. Kotek's education advisor, Melissa Goff, suggested the bill provides a balance between providing support and tightening accountability and emphasizes the latter. Goff said some of Kotek's education priorities come from a review of public schools by the Oregon Secretary of State. Some feel that the state's education department is already viewed as a threat by many local school communities. Two of the state's leading education stakeholder groups are the Coalition of Oregon School Administrators, or COSA, and the Oregon School Boards Association. They have raised concerns about the proposal, including a loss of local control by public schools. COSA suggested that if the state is going to identify problems, it also needs to be willing to help solve them. More work will be done on the bill at an education committee scheduled for March 30th. Idaho lawmakers recently passed legislation barring the use of student ID as a form of identification for voting. But youth groups there plan to fight the law, which they say disenfranchises them from the voting process. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
Idaho students aren't letting their right to vote with a school ID go down without a fight. Earlier this month, state lawmakers passed legislation that prohibits the use of student IDs as a valid form of identification when voting. Bay Vote and March for Our Lives Idaho have since filed a suit challenging the law. Matt Gordon is representing the groups and says this is a direct attack on Idaho students' ability to vote.
When you remove a form of identification that students have and that they can show at the polls when voting, that does make it harder for some students to vote, particularly students for whom that is the only form of acceptable identification that they might have to show at the polls.
Gordon notes this legislation comes at a time when youth voter registration has surged. An analysis of 2022 compared with 2018 found registration for people ages 18 and 19 jumped 81%, highest in the nation. Lawmakers who supported the bill say it's needed to counter voter fraud. However, Gordon notes lawmakers, as well as the Secretary of State, couldn't cite any cases to support this claim.
The evidence just isn't there. They presented no evidence of any fraud associated with the use of student IDs to vote.
Gordon says the aim is to have this case resolved before the 2024 election so that students understand what kind of identification they need or need to obtain to vote next year. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Portland Police's LGBTQ plus Advisory Council quietly disbanded in January of 2022. Unfortunately, the Bureau never updated its website about that fact. That's led the Human Rights Campaign to award our city a perfect score on their 2022 Municipality Equity Index. Willamette Week reports that the LGBTQ plus Advisory Council, formerly known as the Alliance for Safer Communities, has been on hiatus since last year due to lack of membership. This advocacy council has a long history, starting in 1995 when the city established a sexual minorities roundtable to improve relations between law enforcement and the LGBTQ plus community. But unfortunately, the latest incarnation of the council struggled to maintain membership in recent years due to protests against police abuses against persons of color and other marginalized groups. Avi Klepper, the most recent chair of the Alliance, stepped down in 2021. Leaders with Pride Northwest told Willamette Week that volunteering for the Alliance was not the best use of their time, especially since, quote, its work didn't seem to be translating to progress on the streets. The city of Portland mourned the loss of its beloved drag icon Darcel 15 last week when Walter Cole passed away at the age of 92. Now, the Portland City Council says they're open to renaming a section of Northwest Davis Street, which houses Darcel's Club, to Darcel 15th Street. The street sign was briefly changed to just that this past weekend in a temporary tribute to Darcel. Commissioner Carmen Rubio told Willamette Week, quote, I love this idea. Darcel deserves recognition in our city so that future Portlanders know her impact. Mayor Wheeler is reportedly on board with the change as well, and the proposal is gaining traction down at City Hall. Those interested in putting forward a formal proposal to make the name change permanent should reach out to the Office of Commissioner Mingus Mapps, who oversees the Portland Bureau of Transportation. Michigan becomes the first state in 50 years to repeal their state's right to work law, and state and federal leaders offer support and aid to Mississippi residents recovering from deadly tornadoes over the weekend. With those stories and more, it's Catherine Carley with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
No matter who you are or where you come from, you deserve a fair shake at a good life in this country and in this state, and that's exactly what we are going to deliver.
Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer celebrates with members of the Teamsters after repealing the state's right-to-work law, the first state to do so in more than 50 years. The law prohibited unions from collecting dues from non-union employees, even though they benefited from union protections. Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves praised those helping residents recover from a series of tornadoes over the weekend, which killed at least 26 people and leveled entire neighborhoods.
Mississippians have done what Mississippians do. In times of tragedy, in times of crisis, they stand up and they show up.
President Joe Biden issued an emergency declaration Sunday, making federal funding available to affected areas. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu fired his defense minister after he called for pausing a court system overhaul. Proposed judicial changes have sparked mass protests by members of the military and others who fear it could cripple democracy. Netanyahu's government holds a very slim majority. His critics say he wants to undermine the courts to cling to power and stay out of prison. Unfounded vote fraud claims are fueling strict new voter ID laws across the country. Former Georgia gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams says eligible voters are being disenfranchised.
The United States has always required for you to prove who you are. But what has happened in the last decade has been that the standards, the bar has gotten higher and higher.
Ohio is now the ninth GOP-led state to enact new voter ID restrictions and no longer accepts military IDs. A new Idaho law prohibits students from using college IDs, and the state Supreme Court in North Carolina looks poised to revive a photo ID requirement declared unconstitutional just a few months ago. Progressive Representative Cori Bush of Missouri says President Biden is not following through on campaign promises to end federal executions.
Congress must act. Congress must pass legislation to abolish the federal death penalty and encourage states to follow suit.
Lawyers for some of the more than 40 federal death row inmates tell the Associated Press they've seen little change since former President Donald Trump left office. Dozens of legal filings show the Biden administration still actively fighting for the death penalty. According to the Labor Department, more than 800 companies employed nearly 4,000 children illegally in the last year. Critics say that's clashing with the education goals of Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders and others.
We will educate, not indoctrinate our kids, and put students on a path to success.
Citing a labor shortage, Arkansas has moved to ease the work rules for those under 16. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on a bill in the Oregon legislature that would give people the right to vote while incarcerated. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather, cloudy with a slight chance of showers and a low of 43. Tomorrow's looking wet with rain and a high of 50. Today in history, it was on March 27, 1998, that the famous little blue pill known as Viagra was approved by the Food and Drug Administration. It was the first drug of its kind, and it launched a second career for politician Bob Dole and 1,000 really embarrassing radio and TV commercials. The quote of the day is from legendary silent film actress Gloria Swanson, who was born on this day in 1899. She said, quote, "If you're 40 years old and you've never had a failure, you've been deprived." Low-income patients in Oregon have financial assistance available to them, but some aren't getting access to that help. A bill in the Oregon legislature would increase compliance among the state's hospitals. Eric Tegedoff has the details.
Oregon's nonprofit hospitals aren't doing enough to provide assistance on medical bills for low-income folks. A bill in Salem aims to change that. Nonprofit hospitals are required by federal law to alleviate medical costs for patients who can't afford them. However, Matt Swanson with the SEIU Oregon State Council says investigations have found these institutions aren't going far enough to help.
People really aren't getting the assistance they need. Instead, they're getting every last dollar really wrung out of them in order to satisfy a bill that they really can't pay. And it's risking other things in their life like housing and food and the ability to get over their health issue.
House Bill 3320 is designed to ensure people get the financial assistance they need and that hospitals are transparent about their assistance practices. In written testimony on the bill, the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems says it agrees with parts of the legislation, but wants lawmakers to keep in mind that insurers are part of this cost picture as well. Swanson says it's important for people who can't afford bills to know they have assistance available.
The purpose of this bill is to really tighten up what compliance looks like and ensure that everyone gets screened before they are sent a bill so that the hospital is giving a hand to folks who need the help instead of letting them get lost in systems that are often confusing and overwhelming at a time when they're really struggling.
The bill received a public hearing last week and is scheduled for a work session on Wednesday. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Oregon legislature is considering a new bill that would allow you to bring your own reusable containers to restaurants for takeout orders. Senate Bill 545 was introduced by Senator Jeanine Solman, a Democrat from Hillsboro. The bill, which aims to reduce landfill waste and cut back on single-use plastics, has already passed the Senate with bipartisan support and now needs approval from the Oregon House. In 2015, Oregon set a goal of reducing plastic and food waste by 25% within 5 years. However, we have not reached that goal, and in fact, only 10% of food waste and 13.7% of plastic waste is currently being diverted from landfills. That's according to a recent report in the Statesman Journal. While some Portland restaurants already have programs in place to allow customers to return plastic and glass packaging for wash or reuse, many takeout containers are not recyclable or compostable due to wax coatings or other materials used to make them. The Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association, however, opposes SB 45. They say that should patrons get sick from a contaminated container, they would likely blame the restaurant. If the bill is passed, the Oregon Health Authority would develop new rules that would include requirements that containers be visibly clean. Those rules would take effect no later than June 30th of 2024. Tracking the effects of pollution on decreasing populations of beluga whales in Alaska and checking in with U.S. Representative Mary Peltola, the first ever Alaskan native to represent the state in Congress. With those stories and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas in Anchorage, Alaska, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. Today, we're featuring stories from our KMBA news desk. In the 1970s, in Cook Inlet in the Anchorage area, thousands of beluga whales could be seen. So many whales that you could feasibly walk across their backs without falling into the water. That's according to Mandy Magura, an author of a map studying the challenges Cook Inlet whales face today. Four decades later, Magura says you'd be lucky to see seven whales at a time. The population stands at around 280 as of 2018, according to the Marine Mammal Commission.
We've lost over 1,000 belugas from this population. That's a huge significant loss.
Magura is the author of the project, which is focusing on pinpointing the reasons why this might be happening to the belugas. According to Magura, the population decline is due to several factors that can be categorized as point source pollution and non-point source pollution. Point source polluters have a permit and pollution comes from a known source.
That would be things such as wastewater treatment facilities, stormwater drains, seafood discharges.
Non-point source polluters don't have a single point of the entrance like point source polluters.
So examples of that would be runoff from roads or on the airport, you know, when it rains or snow melts, that all just kind of runs into the inlet.
These threats are building up for the whales, causing issues like food insecurity, immune compromisation, and noise distractions that serve as a death by a thousand cuts. According to Magura, over long-term exposure, these factors will continue to decrease the population we see today. Catching up with U.S. Representative Mary Peltola, who was sworn into office in January. She's the first ever Alaska Native person to represent Alaska in Congress. Peltola was recently at the U.S. Capitol for the annual Alaska Week. She says she was able to discuss many important matters, including key Alaska Federation of Natives issues.
We talked about a lot of high-level things. AFN is so good at helping frame our priorities as the largest statewide Native political organization. They're really good at looking at things, kind of zooming out, looking at things not beyond just details and beyond just regional issues. They're really looking at Alaska in terms of our place globally.
Peltola is addressing a number of priorities for her home state, such as fishing, Medicare and Medicaid, and marginalized groups in Alaska.
I think we all need to be thinking about veterans, thinking about disabled people, thinking about elders, really thinking about our young people. We need to be looking for solutions on our homeless and unhoused families. 40% of the people in Alaska who do not have a house are children, and that is through no fault of their own. But as an elected person, it really does impact everybody, this homelessness and houselessness issue. And I want to be one of the people at the table coming up with solutions. So those are some of the things that I consider priorities and I want to work hard on.
Peltola's next goal is to continue prioritizing protecting fish and reducing bycatch, and will be tracking National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration expected revisions to some of national standards, which govern allocation, fishery-dependent community participation, and bycatch. Alaska Native artist Crystal Worrell's work will soon be on a postage stamp. The U.S. Postal Service is officially launching a set of four stamps called The Art of the Skateboard. Worrell's illustration showcases the Northwest Coast formline style of design, which she is known for. Worrell, whose Tlingit and Athabaskan used blue and indigo colors to depict a salmon, which she says is important to Alaska Natives because it's fed them for thousands of years. Worrell is not the first Alaska Native to have her art featured on a stamp. Her brother Rico designed a raven stamp for the post office 2 years ago. The two are business partners who sell their designs on t-shirts, jewelry, playing cards, and even snowboards. I'm Jill Freitas.
On the heels of a dire UN warning about the fact that the window is closing to take action on climate change, a group in Wisconsin hopes to educate students so they in turn can spread the message to adults. Mike Moen has more.
A new report warns that the window is quickly closing to prevent the most harmful effects of climate change. As global leaders face pressure to act, efforts continue to educate Wisconsin families. Last week, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change said countries have to come together quickly to achieve deep reductions in greenhouse gas emissions to secure a livable planet for all. Rebecca Borkowski is with the Wisconsin Association for Environmental Education, which supports teachers and students in learning about these issues. She says they sometimes avoided using words like climate change around parents to avoid political tension. But that's changing.
I think it's a point where affiliates like ours and the national network are just going to have to take more action and become more direct in our conversations here.
As part of their effort to get more climate education in schools, her group is trying to get more adults to become engaged with the issue. That includes hosting online discussions and prompting elected officials and political candidates to talk about climate change, including those running in Wisconsin's high-profile state Supreme Court race. A recent survey of teachers from the North American Association for Environmental Education found that 56% of respondents' students have brought up climate change on their own in the classroom. Megan Giefer chairs the Wisconsin chapter's advocacy committee, says getting kids to pay more attention isn't a concern. She suggests it's harder when adults, who have lived through changing seasons their whole lives, might feel that a cold and snowy winter is enough to think there isn't a threat.
And so a lot of people will brush it off and say, well, that's the Midwest, that's Wisconsin, but it's really not what we're supposed to be having.
A 2021 statewide report noted that Wisconsin winters are warming more rapidly than summers. Meanwhile, the National Teacher Survey says a lack of formal curriculum and an unclear mandate are among the reasons why school districts haven't made climate change education a priority. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
Online misinformation is spreading from English to Spanish. Some content aggregators are adding Spanish language voiceovers or subtitles to misleading content that they think can go viral. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on that story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. More than 40 million people in the U.S. speak Spanish at home. And as the climate warms, many of their communities are harmed by intensifying heat waves, storms, and wildfires. So Spanish-speaking people need access to accurate information about the causes and consequences of global warming. But false and misleading content is pervasive online.
You want to find out more about what kind of information is getting targeted towards these communities.
Christina Lopez is with Graphica, a social media analytics firm. The nonprofit Green Latinos, with support from Friends of the Earth, commissioned her team to study how Spanish language misinformation about climate change spreads on platforms such as Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. They found that most of the misinformation does not originate in Spanish.
Most of it comes from English language resources.
Content aggregators will often find posts they think can go viral and add Spanish subtitles or voiceovers. Lopez says content moderation can help. So it's crucial to devote more resources to rooting out climate misinformation in English and Spanish. So no matter what language they speak, people can access climate information they can trust. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News for Monday, March 27th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. You can call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Karen James, and Michelle Coppola. The producer is Michelle Coppola, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegedoff, Catherine Carley, Jill Freitas, Mike Moen, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 8, it is Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy, KBOO's Tuesday talk radio show covering politics and current events. At 9, alternative radio featuring lectures and interviews from progressive thinkers. At 10, it's Flashpoints with host David Bernstein. Then at 11:30, Art Focus. Host Joseph Gallivan talks with artists, curators, and critics about how art is made and what it means. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members. That's great people like you. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth. We'll be diving into a bill the Oregon legislature has on its table that would give people who are incarcerated the right to vote. Have a great evening.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO FM in Portland.